Today's episode is brought to you by the Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Find out more at canbyfoursquare.com or on Sunday mornings at 9 and 11 a.m. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans. And its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Canby City Administrator Scott McClure apologized last week to city councilors for how Columbia Distributing's application for the Clackamas County Rural Strategic Investment Zone, this is a state incentive program that offers a 15-year property tax exemption on a portion of a large capital investment, like the Columbia Distributing Building. It was presented during the most recent council meeting. So the strategic investment program was created to attract large capital-intensive facilities to locate in Oregon, and the county's SIZ was established in 2010 with approval from the cities of Canby, Estacada, Happy Valley, Molalla, and Sandy. Columbia Distributing, with its 531,000 square foot beverage warehouse and distribution facility in the Canby Pioneer Industrial Park, is the first company to take advantage of the Strategic Investment Zone tax exemption. The program offers an abatement on property taxes due on any amount over the first $25 million of assessed value. However, 25% must be returned each year in the form of a community service fee, which is distributed by agreement between the impacted taxing districts. It's unknown what the assessed value of the completed project will be, and therefore it's impossible to predict how much the SIZ will save Columbia in tax payments over the next 15 years. But it's fair to say that the savings will be significant. The company estimates it is investing or has invested more than $60 million in its land and facilities for the initial build-out. When the application came before the city council last week, virtually every councilor claimed to be unaware of the program, as well as Columbia's plans to apply for it. Columbia's application had been submitted to the city in June 2019, more than 6 months before it was presented to the council. Scott McClure, who is new to the city of Canby and started in the position just a few months ago, apologized for the situation in an email to the city council and Mayor Brian Hodson last Friday that was provided to the Canby Now podcast. Quote, "Had we known that council was not aware of the program in general or the specific Columbia application, it would have been handled differently," McClure wrote. "With that said, we are where we are." McClure urged the council to now move forward in a professional and effective manner. "Let's show the community that we are an organization that can make tough decisions and even recover from a kerfluffle," he said. "Let's also show the development and business community that we are a reliable partner." The company's application was tabled at the most recent city council meeting to be revisited on February 5th. McClure asked councilors to submit to him any further questions or requests for information so city staff can present a more complete and in-depth report on the SIZ application and its impacts on the community. Another large company is eyeing a move to Canby. Stanton Furniture, currently based in Tualatin, hopes to relocate their staff of employees and the entirety of their operations to the Canby Pioneer Industrial Park. If their proposal for a 174,000 square foot manufacturing and distribution facility is approved, The Camby Planning Commission is scheduled to review the project on Monday. The project site is located a stone's throw from Columbia's Distributing's new facility, which is still under construction, and immediately to the south of the location of Caruso Produce, another Tualatin company who wants to move here. Ha ha, suck it, Tualatin! And whose facility was okayed by the planning board at their last meeting. That piece in there, that was from Frankie, that's not me. Stanton's facility would mostly be warehouse space, 160,885 square feet of it, along with about 6,500 square feet of office space and 6,500 square feet of storage. The project would also include employee parking, 36 loading docks, most of them along Molino Road, and a yard area, as well as the required landscaping. The property is bordered by Southeast 4th Avenue, a road that is currently unfinished to the north, and South Molino Road on the east. Developers would also be expected to provide half-street improvements to the city standards along 4th Avenue and Molino Road. The company proposes to split their approximately 300 employees between two shifts, one that starts about 5:30 a.m. and runs through 3, and one that starts at 3 p.m. and runs through midnight. If approved, the company would hope to start construction in the spring and complete the project by February of 2021. Stanton is a family-owned and operated furniture manufacturer known for their high-quality sofas, recliners, and other home furnishings, which are designed with unique features to add comfort, durability, and customer satisfaction, and they all come with a lifetime guarantee. As the company says on their website, quote, "The Stanton name is synonymous with quality and is well-known in the Western U.S. for craftsmanship and reliability." Over the past 40 years, the Stanton family has manufactured more upholstered furniture than any other company based in the Pacific Northwest. Drunken driving is a suspected factor in a fatal two-vehicle crash that occurred shortly after midnight on Wednesday on the Hubbard Cutoff Road near the Aurora State Airport. Oregon State Police say the crash was caused when a Toyota Camry driven by 29-year-old Kelsey Martin of Beaver Creek collided head-on with a Toyota Prius driven by 33-year-old Stephanie Patricio of Woodburn. Patricio sustained fatal injuries and was pronounced deceased when first responders arrived on the scene. Martin sustained serious injuries and was transported by Life Flight to OHSU in Portland. A passenger who was with Martin was not seriously injured. Investigators believe that alcohol impairment on Martin's part is suspected as a contributing factor, according to a release late Wednesday afternoon. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, Martin was still listed as in serious condition at OHSU. Oregon State Police was assisted by Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, Camby Police Department, Aurora Fire District, Woodburn Ambulance, and the Oregon Department of Transportation. There were a couple of other serious crashes in the area this week with alcohol or general negligence being contributing factors. A woman was trapped in her vehicle after a head-on collision with a J.B. Hunt semi-truck carrying potato chips on Ellen Road near Donald and Aurora on Monday morning. It took 23 long, agonizing minutes, but firefighters from Aurora and St. Paul were able to free the woman, who had sustained moderate but not life-threatening injuries. The semi-truck and trailer had flipped in the crash and were on their sides, blocking the entire road. The truck driver, later identified as 37-year-old Tacoma man Andre Otto, sustained minor injuries and was transported by ambulance to an area hospital. The other driver was trapped in her vehicle, a 2016 Jeep, partially crushed and lying under the truck in a ditch. She was alone, conscious, but unable to get out. Firefighters, EMTs on the scene comforted her and treated her injuries while they painstakingly, quote, disassembled the vehicle from around her. Otto was cited and released at the hospital for charges including reckless driving, recklessly endangering another person, and fourth-degree assault. The third crash happened just after 4:30 p.m. on Sunday in the 8,000 block of McKay Road Northeast. This was a rollover crash involving a single vehicle, a 2019 Nissan. When emergency crews arrived, they found the lone occupant of the vehicle trapped inside and had to extricate her. The driver was transported by Life Flight to a Portland area hospital. The driver was identified as 61-year-old Newburgh resident Dana Witt, who sustained non-life-threatening injuries. Investigators believe alcohol use was a contributing factor, and Witt was cited and released at the hospital for DUII. A community meeting on the $75 million bond measure the Canby School District is considering placing on the ballot for the May primary election has been postponed again. The meeting was initially set for January 14th, then reset for 6 to 8 p.m. on February 3rd in the library of the Ackerman Center. In an email from Canby School District Communications Coordinator Autumn Foster on Tuesday, the district announced the meeting had been pushed back again. The Bond Development Committee is not yet ready to present a bond package to the community for feedback, Foster said. This meeting will be rescheduled and a new invitation will be sent as soon as information is available. It's unclear exactly how this affects the timeline originally established by the district and its team of bond consultants. That schedule had actually included time for two community input sessions and had anticipated that the Canby School Board would get their first look at the final bond package during their February 6th work session. Their vote on whether to move forward on placing the bond on the May ballot had been set for a special meeting on February 11th. The deadline to place a measure on the ballot for the May primary is February 28th. Foster said the district still plans to hold two community meetings. A revised timeline is being developed that will be presented to the school board at their regular session this Thursday. The district could place a bond measure on the ballots for either the May or November elections this year without an anticipated tax increase. The measure, if passed, would extend the tax rates from the bond that built Baker Prairie Middle School 15 years ago. However, if the district fails to pass a measure this year, any future proposal would then represent a tax increase, which would be a much more difficult challenge. There is also the matter of a $4.8 million matching grant the district can collect from the Oregon Office of School Facilities, but only if they pass a bond measure in May. This award will have expired by November, and the district would have to reapply for funding with no guarantee of receiving it. The bond would address high-need facility maintenance and improvement projects, safety and technology updates, and educational and vocational upgrades that would expand science labs and increase opportunities for hands-on learning. Amazing Bella, aka Bella Capra, is the 91 school district sixth grader from Canby who has sent hundreds of letters and care packages to deployed U.S. service members over the past several years, including during this past holiday season. But she's also a competitive indoor skydiver. This week, she and her family returned from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where Bella took flight at the U.S. Indoor Skydiving National Championships, representing the state of Oregon and little old Canby. Of course, she made us proud, taking second in the freestyle junior intermediate category for the second straight year, as well as a third place finish in the dynamic two-way advanced competition with one of her coaches, David San Pedro. Bella impressed many with her performances on the national stage, including USIS indoor skydiving competitors and instructors Benji McAndrews and Mike Wittenberg. Here's what they had to say about Bella's freestyle junior intermediate routine this weekend. It's Benji's voice you'll hear first.
And now Bella, speaking of bundles of joy.
Boy, what can I say about this girl, man? This girl, I had the privilege to work with her a little bit, and I remember I worked with her side flying. And literally, she learned how to side fly in 15 minutes. And I've told her parents, I'm like, you're lying to me. She's never tried that before. And she's like, they're like, nope, she hasn't. I mean, she literally learned how to side fly in 15 minutes. I mean, she is and giving her minor corrections, it was insane how quickly this girl picks things up. It was really just a pleasure to work with her because of how quick she progresses.
Yeah. Yeah, she's awesome, always smiling, you know. But that side flying, for everybody out there, who is wondering, it's not an orientation that we really discuss until you're good enough to fly everything else. You have to be so proficient to even think about side flying. And then you realize that you don't know anything about flying. Most people put hours into side flying.
Yeah.
For her to get it in 15 minutes, it just shows the prowess of these kids, how quickly they learn.
Yeah. And she's got some stuff you can't teach throughout the year. She keeps getting better, but even at the beginning, she's always looks good doing it. You know, her style is very nice.
That style is impeccable. That is world-level style from a a young little kid. A young kid. And you can tell she cares about the style. All the grips she's taken on herself, really proving her confidence, her comfort level. Gorgeous breaker.
Yeah, keeping her hands down low at her hips.
Everybody take note. Everybody take note. You want to fly like this.
Yeah, look at her.
If you need some coaching, Bella will be available in a couple years. Yeah, just showing off more of that prowess. She's got this cool Bella flip. I don't really know what to call it.
Yeah, she does really good right there.
Yeah.
Flipping it around.
Really cool, really cool. Yeah. I don't see too many people doing anything like that.
Nice job.
Nice job from Bella.
For video of Bella's performance, visit our website, CanBeNowPod.com, or check out the Can Be Now podcast channel on YouTube.
Police beat for the week of December 10th through the 16th. On December 10th at 4 a.m., report of three unknown juveniles hiding behind parked vehicles, acting suspicious. Upon arrival, officers noticed the doors of a vehicle were wide open and it appeared to have been ransacked. Contact was made with the owner, who reported items were missing. At 5:55 a.m., following a traffic stop, the speeding driver was cited for driving without a license or insurance. The vehicle was towed away. 6:13 a.m., theft of items from two unlocked vehicles. At 7:30 a.m., theft of items from an unlocked vehicle overnight. At 7:46 a.m., report of the theft of a purse from a residence. It appeared that the intruder entered both a vehicle and home through unlocked doors. At 8:19 a.m., theft of items from an unlocked vehicle, South Ponderosa Court. At 3 p.m., report of a vehicle being stolen several weeks prior. The victim did not want to report the theft when it occurred because there had been an active warrant for his arrest. At 7:58 p.m., report of an unknown person entering an unlocked vehicle and stealing loose change. Other valuables were left behind. The most important thing here is someone needed to change. Huh? Frankie's not the only one with jokes. At 9:56 p.m., report of an intoxicated person sleeping in the lottery area of a business. Once officers were able to wake the man, he was warned not to drive and then to wait for his ride home. Later the same evening, officers were dispatched when the man left the business, entered his vehicle, and drove away at a high rate of speed. The intoxicated man was subsequently arrested for DUI. Obviously. That was all December 10th, by the way. On December 11th at 8 a.m., report of a stolen vehicle. At 12:30 p.m., report of a hit and run, damage to parked vehicle, because Camby hates parked vehicles. At 2:18 p.m., report of two suspects stealing items from a store and then entering and driving away in a vehicle. And finally, 11:05 p.m., an uninsured vehicle was stopped. The juvenile's fake identification was seized, and he was cited. On December 12th at 2:06 p.m., report of a person throwing a walker at a delivery truck. I'm just going to repeat that sentence real quick. Report of a person throwing a walker at a delivery truck. Officers contacted and arrested the suspect on an outstanding Multnomah County assault warrant. It's not the first time that he had walked on somebody's truck. All right, I'm going to stop with the jokes. At 3:34 p.m., an officer contacted two individuals who had previously been suspected of shoplifting. As they drove into a store parking lot, the driver was arrested on an outstanding warrant for a felon in possession of a restricted weapon and possession of counterfeit money. The passenger was arrested for an outstanding Multnomah County warrant for robbery, providing false information to police, and possession of methamphetamine. On December 13th at 1:06 p.m., report of transients that had been sleeping inside an event's venue tent and that event property actually had been stolen. That's fun. At 4:19 p.m., officers responded to a report that a wanted subject was in the area. Officers located the man and took him into custody on an outstanding warrant for carrying a concealed weapon and, this is Camby, so possession of methamphetamine. And finally, at 4:06 p.m., report of theft of a license plate from a vehicle. Just a license plate. Hold on tight to those people. On December 14th at 12.02 a.m., following a traffic stop on a vehicle for failing to maintain its lane, the driver was arrested for DUI. And I'm going to go ahead and give you one guess as to what he had on him as well while he wasn't driving properly. That's right, meth. On December 15th at 12:29 p.m., officers stopped and arrested a cyclist on an outstanding arrest warrant. He was also in possession of restricted weapon and methamphetamine and heroin at the time of arrest. Finally, on December 16th at 8:21 a.m., report of a lost wallet the day before. And then coming up very quickly after that at 9:43, report of a stolen wallet. The day of the lost wallets is upon us. More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships, whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology. Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of Direct Link's employees live here as well. Direct Link's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to the Canby Now Plus members, Eric and Lauren Humphreys. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can be one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.
Joining us on the Canby Conversation today is a naturopathic doctor here in Canby. She's the co-founder and co-owner of the Canby Clinic, as well as the medical director over there. It's Dr. Erin Walker. Hi, Dr. Walker.
Hello. Hello, Frankie. Thanks for having me on today for an interview.
Absolutely.
Excited to speak with you.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on. So I wanted to start by just talking a little bit about what naturopathic medicine is for folks that may not be familiar with that.
That's a great question, and I think that is probably one of curiosity to the general public.
And maybe a bit of like misunderstanding or
misunderstanding or misnomers.
They picture probably just like all acupuncture, or like something, you know, happening in a weird torchlit cave or something.
Yes, lots of incense and herbs, dried herbs hanging all over, I think. Thick, dark tapestries for
right,
sure.
Right.
In the state of Oregon, naturopathic physicians are primary care providers. And so I'm licensed and practiced as a primary care provider. Naturopathic medicine, we have tenets that we commit to or believe in and practice from. And one of the main tenets is a tenet that physicians share as a community and group, and that is first, do no harm. Most people are familiar with that.
Sure.
Commitment that physicians make. In naturopathic medicine, we have tenets that are unique to naturopathic medicine, and one is docere, which is doctor as teacher. And that means that naturopathic physicians take time with patients to educate patients on their basic physiology and biochemistry, explaining why they have symptoms that they have when we can, or why the labs are saying what they say, how the body heals, what a healing therapy is versus a palliative therapy. So there's a lot of instruction and teaching that I do with patients and helping them get to know their bodies. Mm-hmm. And another tenet that naturopaths hold is we are very much detectives. We like to find the cause of the disease.
Ooh, cool.
Or disease state. And mm-hmm. we do a lot of investigating in finding the cause that helps us to be, when we can, right? It helps us to be curative. There's not always a way of finding the cause. And we of course discuss that with the patient, but when we can, we definitely like to investigate and look for the cause. Mm. So we, our approach to medicine can be a little bit different. The other way I like to describe kind of that primary care blending with the natural therapies is, for example, if a patient comes in and they have pneumonia, right, a deep lung infection, mm-hmm. that's very, can be life-threatening depending on the population. With pneumonia, I will still prescribe antibiotics as a indicated therapy if it's a bacterial infection. Mm-hmm. And I use antibiotic therapy in my practice. It's a beautiful tool. However, following that or in conjunction with that, I will use herbal therapies and nutrients and other treatments to encourage the lung tissue to heal. Hmm. And that's a little bit different than a conventional medical doctor. So cool. We're really aiming at healing tissue, at getting the body to heal when we can.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. That's really interesting. And I do think that that's a misconception that a lot of people have, that, you know, naturopathic doctors do sometimes use vaccines, do sometimes use antibiotics. You know, they're not like mm-hmm. completely anti or opposed to all forms of traditional medicine by any right. means. It's just right. a little bit of a larger or maybe a different angle on or approach to health. Dr. Yes. Walker, when you're doing kind of the investigation thing, I'm imagining a little bit like a game of Clue. You know, are you like yes. Colonel Mustard with the bad diet and lack of exercise in the ballroom? Is it like that at all, or am I way off?
Yeah, and it's the body is a fascinating. It's just a fascinating and amazing place. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of weight that I give to the patient's history, and so there can be beautiful clues, gems just hidden in that history. And so, as a physician, and the way we practice medicine here at Canby Clinic, I am allotted to take extra time with patients, and I do have the longevity with most of them. You know, I've worked with most of my patients for more than 2 years, mm-hmm. Some of them for as long as I've been in practice, which has been just a beautiful gift for me as a doctor to traverse time with somebody in that way.
Sure.
Again, part of what we do here at Canby Clinic, there's been a lot of changes in healthcare. And it's really challenging, I think, to study for research to delve into and study that relationship that a physician has with a patient, and kind of I see that as sacred ground. I hold that with regard and respect, and there's a lot of therapeutic benefit in just having a relationship like that with the patient. Sure. And you know, in medicine now in the United States, just what with the change in the landscape, we're really losing that in many, many communities. And again, I feel like that those pieces are difficult to study. It's difficult for research to quantify what's being lost in medicine. But that therapeutic relationship and attaining that, I have a strong regard for that, and am very honored and glad that we're able to provide that here at the clinic for patients of the clinic. So,
Yeah, I really love that. And I, you know, to me, like, I love the idea of, like, when you read, like, older books or even from, like, you know, Jane Austen era type books where the country doctor really was, like, you know, a trusted friend and advisor, you know, somebody you'd invite to dinner, like, more than just a, you know, a professional that you had a professional relationship type with. I think that's really cool that you guys are bringing a little bit of that back. So, speaking of which, let's obviously talk a little bit about the Canby Clinic. You guys have been going for almost 10 years, right?
I know. And until you put it that way, I hadn't really considered that. Oh, we are going to have a big anniversary in July.
Yeah, absolutely. So, 2010. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's, we started just, oh, goodness. That was, it's fun to kind of think back and remember. So I had, after I graduated naturopathic school in 07, mm-hmm. And started practicing, I had a residency down in Salem, at Salem Naturopathic Clinic, and was, after my residency, I was, they only had availability for me to practice part-time down there, and I really wanted at least 5 days a week. Like, I've been very committed to seeing patients, and so my husband said, hey, there's some space, you know, we've got some office space that we can put some paint up and build out a little bit, and you know, why don't you just start seeing patients over?
Yeah, we got a bunch of space for incense in here. It's going to be great.
What's that?
We got a bunch of space for incense in here. It's going to be great.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll go get some, you know, thick curtains and
yeah. Some of those bead curtains.
Right? So there was just enough space for a reception area and then a treatment room and then there's a bathroom. So it worked out great. So I just, you know, set up shop over there. It's, you know, treatment table and a desk and bookshelves and, you know, mm-hmm. set up shop out there and called the county, made sure everything was kosher. And we get set up and I saw a couple patients and I was like, you know, I'd really like to be a little bit busier. And so my husband encouraged me to write an article, What is Naturopathic Medicine? There was then a flyer called the Canby Connection. So we invested in some advertising and the next month I had 13 new patients and it just has been growing and growing and growing from there. So, and yeah, we moved into town at our current location in 2012, in June of 2012, just before they ripped out First Avenue and did the beautification project in downtown.
Yeah.
And the clinic still grew, even though our First Avenue was all ripped up, the clinic just kept growing and growing. At that time, when we first set up, we were accepting insurance and doing, it's called fee for service.
Okay.
So, what that means is that every time a patient is seen by a physician, there is a bill or a charge for that service. And depending on the complexity of the case or the time that's spent, the charge will vary based upon that. And so we were doing that. That was our practice. So we were doing fee for service and billing people's insurance and or if they didn't have insurance, they'd be cash pay. Mm-hmm. So we did that from 2010 until 2016. And in 2016, that summer, there was just a lot of change that happened. We had had staff for several years, very committed, dedicated staff, and they all found, like, one of them got married and moved out of town, and another one found a job somewhere else, and our resident wasn't going to stay on, and we're like, well, you know, what? It's like we're starting over, kind of, right?
Yeah.
And so Brant and I sat down and said, okay, if we're committed to keeping the clinic going, what if we could do it differently? Now is a good time to ask these questions and to implement some changes.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of kind of upheaval within the insurance industry. We would, for example, if a patient had a certain type of insurance, which I won't name, and I saw patients with this type of insurance anytime between September and January, mm-hmm. That insurance company would not pay until after the first of the year. Mm-hmm. So the clinic would have to just cash flow, even though that insurance company will not pay their bills until after January 1st. So, which left us, like, it just leaves the business in a hard spot, right? Because we still have to pay our people, and we still have to keep the lights on and do all of that. So there's a lot of things going on like that within the insurance industry that made it really hard to run a business. Sure. So my husband did a lot of investigating, and he found what's called a retainer medical practice or a membership-based practice, which is what we do now. So what that means is that patients pay a monthly fee and for services of the clinic and access to the physicians and access to clinic services. And that has changed how that has really helped us to practice very good medicine here. And what we're able to do, for example, let's go back to the patient with pneumonia, right? So if somebody has a little bit of a sore throat and it's kind of dropping into their chest, you know, and they're starting to get a cough, if there's a fee-for-service model, even if somebody has insurance, in order for them to go in and see the doctor, they'll need to pay a copay, right? And so that's a barrier to entry, okay? Like a patient having to pay out of pocket, there's resistance there for people to go in when they have a sore throat or a little bit of a cough. They're going to wait. Maybe I'll get better, right? Yeah, I'm just going to wait. Maybe it'll get better, right? And then, you know, 2 weeks go by, and then all of a sudden, instead of the sore throat and little cough, you've got pneumonia, right? Yeah. That's a whole different animal, you know? And so we were seeing that, we were seeing that with the insurance-based model.
Yeah, I say that to my wife every time I get sick.
Right? It's like, oh man, I don't want to. And for people who don't have insurance, it's like, oh, really don't want to go. It's like, it's going to be a few hundred dollars, right? Like, I don't want to go to the doctor. And I don't blame them. I wouldn't want to go either. So it makes sense then, like if somebody's paying a monthly fee and they get sick, like it's much easier for the patient just to call in or drop us an email or whatever, right? And say, hey, I've got this and this going on. Just want to let you know. And then we can either treat them or we can have them come in and get treated. We can run some testing, right? And it's great. It's so great. It's so great. The other thing that was happening was the insurance was getting a very, they were dictating a lot of what I could and could not do for a patient. For example, if somebody came in, we do injection therapies here, which people don't like to hear that word injection, but because it involves a needle. But we do like trigger point injections for people with tight muscles. And so if somebody comes in and I'm treating them and they're like, oh, you know, I've been doing those stretches and it's really helped, but I just have this one spot in my shoulder that's still really tight, and I do an evaluation, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a trigger point. I'm just going to do the injection, right? Because I'm the doctor, and I said, right, I've been trained to do this. I have tons of experience now, and and I said, I'm not going to do any harm, right? I know what to do. I know how to get this better, and we're going to make it better, right? So I go treat them. Oh, well, the insurance isn't going to pay for that, even though I'm licensed to do it, even though I'm trained to do it, even though it was indicated for the patient. The insurance will not pay for that because guess what I didn't do? I did not prior auth it. I didn't call for prior auth. Right? I didn't spend 45 minutes on the phone with an insurance company asking an insurance company if I could do a treatment for a patient. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So now if a patient comes in and they need a trigger point injection, I counsel them about what that is and what the risks are and the benefits are, and I say, this is how much it is. They're like, yep, sounds great. Let's go. I don't have anyone else there to consult with. It is just between me and the patient. And that's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. So there are, and there are a million other reasons why I love the membership model. Those are two of them. I could go on and on and on, but yes, those are two of them.
So, our listeners, of course, they don't love the 4-hour podcast. But I do love hearing like about different models and different approaches to things that seem so routine. Like we just assume, oh, it has to be this way, you know, like healthcare, and paying for it.
We're going to take a quick break, then we'll be back with more of our conversation with Dr. Aaron Walker. We'll also bring you the story of a meal made from 30,000-year-old bison meat, something we don't recommend for your health. I'm here at Advantage Mortgage with Derek Hill, And Derek, you were telling me about something that just came down from Fannie Mae that people might be interested in.
Yeah, Fannie Mae just came out with a report that said that the average homeowner in the United States has approximately 70% equity in their home.
Oh, now, wow.
Right. I mean, that's obviously average throughout the whole country. But because values have come up so substantially in the last 10 years, there is a ton of equity available that people can utilize.
Cool. So if people are potentially like looking to buy or move into a new home, you're saying that equity means it might be something that you would look at remodeling instead of if the market's not looking favorable to you.
Right, 100%. Because the market in Portland is so tough to buy, you know, we have an average of like 2.5 months worth of inventory. So it's just super hard for people to find what they're looking for. It may be just easier for them to take out some equity and do the upgrades or do an addition or pay off some debt or lots of different things. And that's one of the things that we love to do with people is sit down with them and kind of go over a game plan. You know, cool. Just that's one of the biggest things is knowing what you can do. And we love taking the time to do that for people.
Awesome. Awesome. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call.
They can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we'd love to chit-chat. And we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
So just remember, Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, equal housing opportunity.
What do you think, Dr. Walker, has been, attributed to, or that you would attribute your success in the growth of the Canby Clinic from, you know, that part-time, like one room or one or two room country clinic to what you have now, which is multiple doctors, you know, open throughout the week, tons of patients in the local area and surrounding area? Where do you think that comes from?
We're very blessed. We've been, we've just been really, really fortunate. My husband is brilliant. He's very good at business and he's very good at what he does. We have amazing, very hardworking, committed and dedicated people here at our clinic from the time a patient walks in the door all the way through the entire clinic, each person that they interact with that is represents Canby Clinic is truly a reflection of what this clinic is about. And cool. I've just been very, I can't tell you what a gift it is to come to work and be part of an organization where each person has such, they bring their whole heart and all of their gifts and talents in, and they are working really hard to help each patient. It's really pretty incredible. So it's been a lot of work. It's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, like sure. Any small business owner will tell you.
Sure.
Like there are definitely rough patches and rocky roads, but the blessing of having good people that are very talented and gifted, and it's just such a pleasure to work with them. I can't speak enough to that. And then also how things are set up on an organizational level. My husband is just very brilliant as far as a lot of things go, but
yeah.
His business skills are phenomenal. Yeah. So
cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah.
practicing naturopathic medicine now for, like we said, for almost 10 years in this community. Is there like a favorite story that you like to tell when you sort of think back, or anything that stands out to you as far as, you know, kind of keeping you going when maybe, like you mentioned, some of those rough bumps in the road?
I think it comes back to I do have a lot of really incredible stories about healing and sure. how phenomenal the body is. There are many times, I mean, and when I say healing, I don't necessarily mean cure. There were times when I was doing, you know, an exam on a patient, and, you know, there are, like, you palpate a mass and you know that it's based on their symptoms and the history that they told you, you know that this mass is not, it's not going to be something that they can overcome, mm-hmm. Physically. So, and again, really having that healing relationship with somebody, that connection with somebody where as their physician, you are walking with them through that portion of their life and that portion of their health, and being committed to guiding that person through that time. There are, like, that's what being a physician is. I feel very much like a lot of that is being, to a certain degree, lost in medicine right now. But I think there's a lot of therapeutic benefit in remembering that the patients are people too. So.
Wow. Well, it has been such a joy talking to you, Dr. Walker, and hearing some of your heart for why you do what you do. And it really does come through. Like, I believe it, you know, that you really have this patient-centered approach, and that's what keeps you going. That's really cool to see, you know, that it's not you want to believe, like, your doctors and your healthcare professionals, you know, that it's maybe a little bit more than just a job to them. But, you know, when I talk to you, like, I can tell that that's true. So that's really cool. Is there anything else?
Yeah, and it's...
Oh, go ahead.
It's very tricky for physicians out there, even naturopathic physicians. Like, insurance is... There's a lot of pressure from the insurance companies and from the fee-for-service model. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on physicians to, you know... get away. It's very much a numbers game. It's coming down to that. And I feel like, you know, physicians are very much backed into a corner. And so I think physicians as a whole really hold a very good heart in wanting very much to help people and practice good medicine. I think that, right? Like, why would somebody commit their life, right, to medicine otherwise? And you look at kind of where the industry has gone as a whole, it's really put the docs in a tough situation. So I have a lot of respect and regard for them and for the professionals out there fighting the good fight. And medicine's just really tricky right now. It's just really, really tricky.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Walker. It's been a really joy to talk to you, as I've said, and really, really appreciate you making an appearance on the Cambie Now podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for the invite. It's been such a pleasure. Yeah. So, well,
and congratulations on the surprise 10 years.
I know. Thank you. Yes. The first person wishes happy anniversary.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations. That is an accomplishment for sure.
Yes. Thank you. Take care.
Cambie Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grand Street in downtown Cambie. On Canby Then Today, we're going to take you back in Canby's history much, much farther than we usually go. So buckle up and hold on tight. During the waning days of the Pleistocene epoch between 240,000 and 220,000 years ago, a massive species known as the steppe bison migrated from Siberia to Alaska. The steppe bison, or to use its Latin name, Bison priscus, was an ancestor to the modern bison and resembled it in many ways. It was just a lot bigger. You've heard of Paul Bunyan and Babe, his giant blue ox? Legend has it that Babe turned blue when she was buried to the horns in a blizzard and was so big it would take a crow a full day to fly from one eye to the other. Well, trust me when I say Babe wouldn't have wanted any part of Bison Priscus. The steppe bison stood over 8 feet tall and was longer than a Ford F-150 XLT. With the woolly mammoth, ancient horses, and the woolly rhinoceros, it dominated the mammoth steppe, which was the Earth's most extensive biome during the last ice age, spanning from Spain to Canada and from the Arctic islands to China. The steppe bison has been preserved numerous times in cave drawings, including in the famed Cave of Altamira in Spain. But it has also been preserved in other ways as well. In July 1979, a gold miner in Fairbanks, Alaska, discovered Blue Babe, the 36,000-year-old remains of a male steppe bison, almost perfectly preserved by a rare and lucky set of circumstances. Examining several wounds on the bison's neck and back, researchers determined that it had most likely been killed by an American lion, not Andrew Jackson, but a subspecies of the long-extinct Ice Age lion, the ancient ancestor of the modern African lion. That part wasn't lucky, at least not for Blue Babe, but everything else was. Extreme cold had caused the bison's body to quickly freeze, protecting it from vultures. And over the thousands of years that followed, layers of ice and snow covered the carcass, effectively mummifying it, almost completely intact. The miner named his discovery Blue Babe after Bunyan's mythical ox because of its size and because it was also blue, not from being buried in a blizzard, but from a coating of vivante, a blue iron phosphate that had covered much of the specimen. Blue Babe is notable not just for the quality of its preservation, but by how a research team chose to celebrate the completion of their years of work preparing it for permanent display at the University of Alaska Museum. They ate it. No joke, University of Alaska paleontologist Dale Guthrie and his team carefully removed some meat from the bison's neck and used it to prepare a stew. According to Guthrie, the 36,000-year-old meat was tough and somewhat hard to chew, but also quite delicious and tasted like chicken. No, it's just joking. It resembled ordinary beef. Talk about eating paleo. Eventually, the steppe bison made its way to North America and the Pacific Northwest, where it was spawned a number of subspecies, some of it even larger than itself before dying out, perhaps as recently as 10,000 years ago. Native peoples were known to hunt both the modern bison and its ancient cousins, relying upon them for meat, hides, and bone, and archaeologists believe that this may have contributed to the demise of the now-extinct subspecies of the present-day bison. Now, I know what you're thinking. Well, this is all fascinating, but what the heck does it have to do with Canby? Ha! Well, good question. And let's skip ahead all the way to Saturday, October 13th, 1923. You see, it was then that a crew from the Crown Willamette Paper Mills was working on a large gravel digger on the Willamette River between Canby and Kanema when they made a startling discovery. It was the skull of a prehistoric monster. At least that's how the Canby Herald recounted it. The old bone was an intact skull buried 30 feet under the water. It had eye sockets deep enough to lose a man's arm in and horns that measured 40 inches from tip to tip and nearly a half a foot in diameter. Each horn was about a foot long and 20 inches around the circumference. Monstrous though the creature may have been, it was later identified by an Oregon City paleontologist to have been what was then known as the broad-faced ox, either Bison antiquus or Bison occidentalis by their scientific classifications. D. Edwards, a proprietor of the Electric Hotel, and according to the Oregonian, a, quote, dabbler in paleontology, made the identification and supported his findings by textbooks and treaties on geology. According to Edwards, who made his classification when other local scientists had failed, the broad-faced ox must have been a huge creature, an early article said, many times as large as a buffalo or any other bovine of this day. Its history overlaps that of prehistoric man, and the big oxen were well known to the first men on Earth. The skull was, at the time, one of the finest and most intact specimens ever discovered. The only other fossils being a handful of skull fragments discovered in Corvallis earlier that same year. And, not surprisingly, a fight over its ownership ensued between Crown Willamette, their gatekeeper, A.O. Hollingsworth, and the crew that actually discovered it. The matter was eventually settled, and the fossil was donated to Oregon State University, which was then known as Oregon Agricultural College. It was perhaps the largest example of the species ever found in the nation, with even W.D. Matthews, curator of the American Museum of Natural History, noting its extraordinarily large size. It is estimated that in life, this bison would have stood 7 feet tall at the withers and weighed over 3,500 pounds. Assuming these estimates to be correct, the Oregonian wrote, it can be seen that if this animal were to stand alongside an ordinary buffalo, the disproportion in size would be as marked as that between an ordinary milk cow alongside of her yearling calf. Numerous researchers with the college and from across the country analyzed the specimen or had photos of it and confirmed the species classification as Bison occidentalis. A man who wrote into the Oregonian's editorial department, though, had a different theory. Many, like myself, have doubted the truth of the stories about Paul Bunyan and his blue ox, he wrote. It is indeed a relief to know that evidence of their existence has been found. Might it not appear reasonable that Paul was finishing up the digging of the Willamette River, using perhaps a dull plow in the rocks at the falls, when the blue ox overbet himself and kicked in? Surely a thing like this is possible. Now, if the excavators will unearth the stove that the flapjacks were cooked on and the other relics of that wonderful man and ox, all doubts will be removed and we will believe all that has been told about Paul Bunyan. Ain't nature wonderful?
The Canby Now podcast is brought to you in part by the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun. Lifelong Canby residents Darren and Joan Monin founded the Wild Hare 16 years ago, and as their business has grown and expanded, they've continued to give back to the community they love. They're one of the biggest supporters of school activities, youth sports, local events, and even this podcast. They have a heart for Canby, plain and simple.
They also have some of the best food and drinks on the planet.
Did I forget to mention that?
No, it's all right. I'm going to mention it. It's no accident that residents voted them the best restaurant and best service through the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce last year. Happy hour daily from 3 to 6. Kids eat free on Mondays, live music and breakfast on the weekends. And they have great salads and other healthy options to help you keep your New Year's resolutions. Check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website, thewildhairsaloon.net. The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden, so round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.